Last year, so many people went the extra mile. Healthcare workers went above and beyond. Parents took on the additional role of school teachers. Scientists developed COVID tests and vaccines in record time. If you are running the Chicago Marathon, this is your chance to return the favor. Because this year, you can actually walk an extra mile to honor someone who went the extra mile, or you. So, who are you going the extra mile for? Learn more at the Abbott Health and Fitness Expo, October 8th or 9th at McCormick Place. Abbott, life to the fullest.
Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Pat Boyle with our insider, Charlie Romeliotis. On this edition, we're going to recap the Blackhawks' first preseason action, a 4-3 shootout loss to Detroit. It was the first game for Jonathan Toews in 14 months, over 400 days. We'll break that down for you. Who stood out in that contest and who has surprised us thus far in week one of training camp? It's all coming up next on the Blackhawks Talk podcast.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right, Charlie, the first preseason game is in the books. A 4-3 shootout loss to Detroit. Let's talk about some of the storylines we saw from that. Let's start with Jonathan Toews. First game in over 400 days, 14 months since he played in the bubble in Edmonton. He was out there for 22-plus minutes, had that nice assist on the Kubalik goal. Your impressions of the captain in his return to action?
Yeah, it definitely did not feel like it was 407 days in between games. And Pat, I looked this up when I was writing my story at night. Like, he didn't play 22 minutes at any point during the Vegas playoff series, and one of those games went into overtime. So, like, the fact that he got almost 23 minutes and his body responded well to all the power play and the overtime and the shorthanded and even strength time, like, was super encouraging. And then you look at the stat sheet and it's like he still put up numbers. He scored a shootout goal. He had a primary assist. He won 70% of his draws. Like, he looked like same old Jonathan Toews. And I think we've talked about it. If he can at least get back to like 90% Jonathan Toews, that just completely changes the dynamic of this Blackhawks team.
Yeah, I thought it was a really positive first step. You know, it's 5 days into training camp, and we saw him after, you know, the first workout, and he was definitely dog tired, and you know, he was taking kind of each workout each day as it comes. For him to go out there and play almost 23 minutes, he didn't even know that he'd played that much. Jeremy Colleton said, you know, that wasn't their game plan, but it just, you know, he got stuck out there in the overtime for an extended 2 minutes first shift in OT. I thought it was, you know, encouraging to see him out there. And then the chemistry that, you know, he definitely has chemistry with Kubalik. And I thought the Kurashev, Toews, Kubalik line, as far as what we saw on that Kubalik goal, which of course was five hole, because that's the only way Dominic scores. But it was just a nice little give and go that Kurashev had with Toews. And that's a line that, you know, whether we see Hagel with Kubalik and Toews, or if it's Kurashev, I think you're going to see Kubi and Toews together quite a bit.
Yeah, and we saw how successful that combo was in the bubble. And even going back to the regular season, those two really have some chemistry. And I thought it might take them a while to kind of get back on track. But even in training camp, in the the few days that they've been paired together, they really seem to rekindle that chemistry pretty quickly. And it just honestly seems like who's going to be on the right side of that line. And right now it looks like Brandon Hagel, and I thought he was actually one of their best players in the first preseason game, 8 shots on goal. And he probably could have scored two of the overtime winner. Like, he had so many opportunities in overtime. And it's funny too, because when we talked to him, he said he was working on his finishing touch and his shot release. And then he scores that second period goal and you're like, all right, he's going to get some puck luck. And then overtime rolls around and you're like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, we thought we were past this. So no, it was good. It was good for Brandon Hagel. Like, he picked up exactly where he left off.
We have talked on this podcast about some players who may emerge, you know, from that group that are vying for, you know, to be in the top 12 forwards. And, you know, Adam Gaudette is a name that we've thrown out there as a player with high end skill, has not quite reached his potential early on in his career. And a lot of that was due to the medical issues he was dealing with, the stomach issues, the GI issue he had, that he's now overcome and has changed his diet and he put on 20 pounds. And while he didn't score or have an assist in the opener against Detroit, he had 6 shots on goal. He had a couple of hits. He had that highlight reel move in the first period and, you know, goes off the post and the crossbar. I was really impressed at both ends of the ice about what Adam Gaudette brought to the equation.
Yeah, and I thought it was extremely noteworthy that he got promoted to the second line in the second period. Like, usually in the preseason, you're rolling your 4 lines, you're giving everyone equal opportunity to play, you know, some power play, some special teams. And Jeremy Colleton right away noticed that he was going. And he said after the game, he's like, we wanted to give him more ice time because we wanted to feed off what he was doing on the ice. And I thought that was extremely noteworthy. Like, he was getting power play time. I think he played a little bit of the penalty kill as well. But I know we talked about this on our last podcast or the podcast before about our potential breakout player. And that's a guy like that. That's a guy that has the potential to break out if he can fulfill his potential, obviously adding 20 pounds and having the diet change. And even he said this is the best he's ever felt. So I know it's cliche to sound because some, but he actually means it. Like, this is legitimately the best he's ever felt. And so maybe we do see him tap into that offensive potential more this year.
What did you think of Lucas Reichel in his first exhibition game and even what you've seen in the first handful of days of training camp? He certainly looks more mature than his age, and it doesn't seem like, you know, his baptism in the National Hockey League is too big for him. He seems like he's right on that cusp where it could go either way. You could see him make the team opening night, or you could also see him, you know, sent to Rockford for a little more seasoning, but it's just a matter of time before he's going to join the big club.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he was probably one of the guys that didn't stand out in the preseason opener, but I don't think it was a negative. I think it's more of that game was more about getting his feet wet, and he was playing on the third line, so it's not like he was playing top power play unit and with Jonathan Toews to get that opportunity. So I think for him, it was more like, let's just get him acclimated to the transition to the North American game. And when he was speaking to the media before the game, I was kind of like looking at his stature. Like, he still has some ways to go to like fill out his frame. And so I think this is the prospect we've talked about in the past. Like, I think you want to over ripen this kid. And I don't think there's any rush to, you know, I don't think there should be any discussion about or any pressure about him making the opening night roster. I think you let him develop at his own pace, because when's the last time the Blackhawks really over ripened a prospect? Like, Kirby Dach started out right away. They rushed Adam Boqvist because they needed to, they needed some help on defense. Like, I feel like the Blackhawks can be patient in his development. So I would wait. I would really wait until Lucas Reichel is over ready to call him up and make him a full-time NHL player.
You know, we had Brandon Hagel in the interview room the other day, and, you know, it's funny to see just how in 1 year he's gone from a bubble player who's trying to make the team to, you know, kind of like the poster child for what Jeremy wants to see forwards play like, to getting a contract extension, the whole nine yards. And so he was asked, you know, who might be the next Hagel? Who might surprise some people in this camp and turn some heads. And he mentioned Mackenzie Entwistle, his roommate. And, you know, you watch Entwistle and he's got all the, he's got great size. He's got a good blend of speed, of athletic ability, of size. What have you seen from Entwistle so far, and where do you see his chances of turning some heads? I mean, I think most of us thought Rockford would be the natural spot for him.
Yeah, so I remember just rewinding all the way back to his draft class. I want to say the Blackhawks had a third round pick. They had the 69th overall pick, and they were prepared to take Entwistle with that pick. And he got taken one spot before them to Arizona. And then obviously when they make that Marian Hossa trade, it was important for them to include him in the deal because they felt like there was something there. And so they've had their eye on him for a while. I think the one thing that you've been hearing Jeremy Colleton and even Mackenzie Entwistle say is like how much his skating has improved, like for a big guy and playing a checking type role. Like you obviously need to skate with some of the big boys if you're going to shut down the opponent's top line. And for him, they've been raving about how much his skating has improved. And I think we're seeing that slowly. Like he's obviously, when you're watching him, he's not the fastest guy. Like you don't see him like, wow, he's one of the fastest guys on the ice, but you can certainly see that he's taken strides there. And so I think that really is going to help him. I don't know necessarily if he's going to be a full-time NHL player at any point this year, but I do think if they call him up, he can play that fourth line checking role. We really haven't seen him play any, take any faceoffs when he was in his brief stint in Chicago last year, but I do think that's another part of his game that could use improvement, and that he could also contribute to the team in that area.
I'll tell you a guy that has been really noticeable in training camp and was in that first preseason game. We talk about his brother all the time for obvious reasons, but Caleb Jones is he's better than I thought he was going to be. Like I thought he was going to be just kind of like in that fifth, sixth, seventh defenseman role, and kind of like you wouldn't really see him emerge, or, you know, on any given day you would think like one player would have like Beaudin would look good on Monday. Mitchell might look good on Wednesday. And, you know, Jones might look good on Friday. But I've seen Caleb. I think he's been really consistent. I thought the goal where Hagel scores, it starts with Hagel winning a board battle. And then Doc, below the goal line, gets the puck to Caleb Jones. And Caleb was really patient with the puck. And he moved east to west. And didn't make a force a pass, didn't force a shot, waited for Doc to circle back out to the top of the circle, got the pass to Doc, and then Doc eventually gets it to a wide open Hagel, and it goes into the back of the net. He plays with his head up a lot of the times. I've been really impressed with where Caleb Jones is at from kind of what I expected to see. How about you?
Yeah, I think the best way to describe it is that he's very steady. Like, not a lot happens when he's on the ice, like in a bad way. Like we kind of describe it like if you're on the ice and you're nothing is really happening out there, like in a good way. Like they're not giving up any odd man rushes or any scoring chances allowed. Like he's just a steady defenseman. I think that's exactly what they need from their third pairing, because that's not like for your third pairing, you're throwing guys out there that are going to play what 14, 15. Maybe 16 minutes a night. And so you just don't want anything to happen out there while you let your big guns do the work. So I agree. I saw that with Caleb Jones, and it wasn't just in the preseason game, but he's been like that all training camp. And you can even hear it when Jeremy Colleton talks about him, how he's been taking that step every single day, and he's not really regressing at any point this camp as camp gets harder moving forward.
And he's making some really good defensive reads in training camp as well. So it'll be interesting to follow his progress here over the next week and change. The power play went 0-for-5 against Detroit. Now, the unit that was out there most of the time for Jeremy Colleton's crew was Bjorkstrom, Doc, Kubalik, Kurashev, and Kalnuk. that is sort of the second power play unit in training camp. What did you see from the power play that you liked or didn't like on Wednesday night?
Yeah, well, I thought the good thing, obviously they went 0-for-5, and that's not great, but I thought they had several chances to score. Like they really generated some offense, and I think Natural Stat Trick had them at 10 scoring chances on their power play. So like that's good. Like that's good enough to eventually over time you're going to get your bounces. I think the one thing I've noticed, the difference between this year's power play and last year's power play, is how much movement there is. Like we're seeing not just guys from the left and right circle. Like we're seeing like Jonathan Toews and Kirby Dach in the net from presence role or the bumper role. Like there's constant movement, and obviously they have their structure to start, but that's not necessarily how they're ending up on the power play. And so I think we're going to see a lot of that. And how many times did we see last year how stale the offense got? Like the guys just weren't moving, and that's essentially why the power play kind of stalled, is because there wasn't much movement, and the penalty killers didn't really have to work. And so I think that's a big change. And I think they also have the personnel to do some different things with Tyler Johnson and the return of Jonathan Toews and Seth Jones running the point. So they have all these different options on the power play.
Yeah, and that first power play unit that we've seen in training camp thus far, it's Seth Jones, it's Patrick Kane, DeBrinket, Toews, and Tyler Johnson in the bumper role, as you mentioned. And Kane is in constant motion, as you said, on that power play. Like, we've seen him in years past where Jeremy's talked about, we want to see Patrick move, but I don't think I've ever seen him move as much as I have early on here as they work on that unit. And it's going to be interesting to see how Tyler Johnson adapts to the bumper role, because that's not a role that he's had a lot of work with down in Tampa. That's something that, you know, he's watched other guys on that team do. And, but he said he's up for the challenge.
Yeah. And I honestly don't think like he'll be pretty good. He's a relentless kind of forward. Like he's not a guy that's obviously he's small, but like he can be a gritty player and he's a competitor. So I think with the constant movement, like we just mentioned, like I don't necessarily think that he's going to be married to that bumper role. Like I think there is going to be a lot of movement. And the one thing too that I will say is, how nice is it that this Blackhawks team on their second unit has Kubalik and Kirby Dach? Like they have options on the second unit if the first isn't going. So that's another nice element that they have that they didn't have last year.
Before we get into some other things about the recap of week one, I still want to put a bow on the preseason game. I thought Kevin Lankinen was okay. I thought the Mitchell Stevens goal, you know, good to get those out of you in exhibition games. But that's a puck that, you know, if you're in a hockey game in the regular season, that's one, you know, he would stop 99 times out of 100. And that's something that, it can be deflating when you're carrying play and then something like that squeaks by.
Yeah, and I think one of the things too is I thought it was important that Kevin Lankinen did get the whole game, because like if you took him out at the halfway mark, just like Detroit did with their goalies, then he's sitting on, maybe he was just getting going, like he was just starting to shake off the rust. So I think that's a reason, and Jeremy said it after the game too, is not a ton of their goalies are going to get the full game. And so they wanted Lankinen to be one of those guys that did get a full game to shake off that rust early.
And one of the things that Lankinen said he really needs to work on or worked on in the offseason and tends to do early on in this season is handling the puck. And that's something when you watch Marc-Andre Fleury, just how second nature it is for him, that he is like a third defenseman out there. And then you see at times not the crispness of a play as the puck's rimmed around or as he tries to set up a defenseman for an outlet or what have you. So that's certainly an area that, you know, Lankinen is going to grow into, and that'll be interesting to watch his maturation in that area. We're not going to overreact to a first game by any means, but the defensive play overall is a theme that we're focusing on here at the start of this season to see improvement there. 5-on-5 scoring chances. It was 17-15 in favor of the Hawks, and they allowed 8 5-on-5 high danger chances by the Red Wings. So, you know, not a huge number. Certainly we saw some big numbers in that category in years past. And overall, did you think they played a pretty sound defensive game on Wednesday?
Yeah, I thought they did. I think that the numbers might be inflated in preseason just because there are so many young guys and so many guys. Even Jonathan Toews mentioned it after the game, saying like, there's so many guys that I haven't played with that I'm trying to develop chemistry with. Obviously, he played with Kubalik in the bubble and even the regular season the prior year, but he hadn't played with Philip Kurashev, and he hadn't played with some Wyatt Kalina, Caleb Jones. Like, all these guys are trying to get on the same page. So I think I would be a little bit more concerned as the season went on systematically if things still hadn't improved. But in the preseason, I think it's more about the guys just trying to find themselves and develop some on-ice chemistry as opposed to maybe the system or the defensive structure has been out of whack.
So as we look back at week one, I think one of the, you know, somewhat surprises was the fact that Tyler Johnson is centering Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat. Again, these are things that aren't in stone. You would say Johnson, you know, coming from Tampa, where he was more in a fourth line role on that team. But certainly he's had top line experience. I mean, when the Hawks faced the Lightning in 2015, Johnson was in a top six role for the Lightning. So this is not like foreign territory for him. But one area he needs to work in is the faceoff circle. You need to have the puck when you have those two guys like DeBrincat and Kane on the ice with you. What have you seen thus far of Johnson centering that line? And do you think this could be a long-term solution?
Yeah, I do think he's been good during training camp with Kane and DeBrincat. Like, you can tell, like, they're guys like that. They think the game on the same wavelength, and so I think that they're maybe ahead of the curve in regards to from that regard. But I don't know if it's going to be necessarily a long term fit. I just think we've seen this in the past where the Blackhawks give these respected veterans some opportunity with the top guys early. Like, we saw it even when they signed Chris Kunitz to a 1-year deal. Like, they immediately put him on the first line left wing, even though they probably knew that he wasn't going to be there for long term. And so I think that's why I don't want to say they're doing this out of respect, but I feel like they're like, all right, you're obviously a two-time Stanley Cup champion. You got some offensive potential to you. Let's see what you can do with Kane and Toews, because they know they could at any point put a Kirby Dach or a Jonathan Toews or a Dylan Strome there. And so I think they're just trying to develop some early chemistry.
I know Patrick Kane on the first day of camp, but mentioned that, you know, his undisclosed injury is not completely healed, but doesn't see it being a long-term problem. From our vantage point, watching at Fifth Third Arena during training camp, you can't tell that he's laboring in any way. What have you thought of 88 so far as we get ready to see him in his first preseason action coming up this weekend?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I don't see him being hampered in any way. I think on a previous podcast, I said I'm a little bit more concerned maybe than others, but I think that's more longevity, right? Like, when we get to the dog days of the year in January and February, how is that holding up? How is his body holding up during the course of an 82-game season, not a 56-game schedule? And if this team has playoff aspirations, you know, you want him to be, he's a guy that has to be healthy going into the playoffs for the Blackhawks to have any sort of success there. So I think that's something that we're going to monitor going forward. But yeah, in training camp, he certainly doesn't look like he's being hampered by anything.
And let's briefly touch on the D pairings that we've seen at training camp so far. McCabe and Seth Jones together. Your thoughts on what you've seen so far from what would be the top pairing for the Hawks?
Yeah, so I think that's going to be a good combination. For one, Jake McCabe is a guy, he's a stay-at-home type defenseman. Like, where he gets himself in trouble is when he has the puck. And I know the coaching staff kind of raved about how he did pass the puck well in Buffalo, but I do think he's not a great puck manager. Like he doesn't have great puck possession skills. So I think you have to pair him with a guy that's a puck moving type defenseman and is responsible two way. And that's where I think it'll allow Seth Jones to really play his own game, because when he was talking about how the differences between Colleton's system and John Tortorella's system, Torts really didn't allow them to play a ton of they didn't have a ton of transition opportunities. It was more like stay at home, and when the puck gets out, then we move the zone. Whereas this is different, where Jeremy Colleton really is probably going to tap into some more potential with Seth Jones to preach or to emphasize more that transition game. So I think that's going to benefit Jones, having a guy like Jake McCabe paired with him to be that responsible stay-at-home defenseman type player with Seth.
As for the second pairing, but we've seen Riley Stillman with Connor Murphy. We thought maybe you'd see DeHaan in a top four role. How do you see that playing out? Who do you think? Do you think it's going to be Stillman and Murphy?
So it's an interesting question, because I think we could agree that Riley Stillman is not a top four defenseman, but at the same time that they probably want to pair him with someone that is more defensively responsible. Because if you do have a third pairing with Riley Stillman, and whether it's Caleb Jones or Wyatt Kalanuk, there's a lot of room for error there. Like if they don't catch on pretty quickly, and then you're leaning heavily on the top four if you put a Calvin DeHaan with the Connor Murphy. So I think they're more so just trying to experiment how they can balance out the three pairings. But I think over time that might differentiate itself, where you're going to see the Blackhawks leaning more heavily on their top four with McCabe, Jones, DeHaan, and Murphy, and then they're going to try to get by with their third pairing. So we'll see how that plays out. I think they're probably experimenting more in the preseason to see if that's something that can stick. We'll see how the combos and the pairings shake out as training camp rolls along, and what different combos and pairings that they experiment with moving forward.
What was it like to be in the United Center on Wednesday night with fans there?
It was really weird. I sat down in my press box seat in seat 38, and it was like, I can't believe 18 months ago was when I was sitting in the seat and the world shut down. Like we were watching it unfold in real time. So that part was really weird. But like at the same time, it also felt like we didn't skip a beat. Like it felt like old times again. So it was just really weird. I think the strange part was just navigating through the building again and making, you're like, oh, can I go in this room? Are we good? Okay, cool. Yeah. Can I go here? Oh yeah, we're good. So it was cool. Like, and the fact that there were fans in the building, it's got to be weird for a guy like Jonathan Toews, who I'm sure like there's no real, like for him, he didn't really experience what life was like during the 56 game schedule with no fans. But I'm sure for the other guys that really went through the grueling season where even they had the restrictions off the ice, I'm sure that was a different feeling for them. So man, it felt nice. It felt like old times again, being in that building and being in our normal typical spot in the press box.
Hey, if you're looking for something to do on Friday night, why not go check out this team? There's a lot of excitement around it. Tickets still available. You can go to Blackhawks.com or their new app. Download their new app. It's fantastic. Hooks you up. Pre-game takes you through the full game experience, and you'll get your thoughts even afterwards of what you experience at the United Center. So they're in action Friday, October 1st, against the Blues. A little home-and-home action this weekend with St. Louis. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. For our insider, Charlie Romeliotis, I'm Pat Boyle. We'll catch you next time. Don't forget to rate us, and we'll see you next time in the Blackhawks Talk podcast. Did you know that 80% of the grass-fed beef sold in the United States is imported from overseas? It's staggering. That's why I get my meat from GoodRanchers.com. When you buy Good Ranchers, not only are you getting amazing meat, but you're also supporting American farms. GoodRanchers.com safely delivers American craft beef, better than organic chicken, and more, delivered quickly and safely to your door. Don't play the grocery store guessing game. Know where your meat comes from with GoodRanchers.com. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use the code Chicago for $20 off and free express shipping.